Well, my name is Joe Harrington. I'm from Leather from Pine Barn here. Worked out at the place for a long time down Limerick way over in Australia. And now back in Leather from Pine and involved in as much things as I can in mm-hmm. the area on a voluntary community basis.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you do here in Leather from Pine.
Well, coming up next, I suppose, the most immediate thing is the Dan Paddy Andy Festival. That's going over 22, 23 years now. We missed the last couple of years because of COVID, but we will have it this year for sure. We have all the bands lined up and we're set and ready to go. So looking forward to that. We're the festival that's the furthest away from a town and that you can still be on dry land. Mm-hmm. So we like the idea that we have a festival in such an isolated spot as Leather from Pine.
That's a matchmaking festival, isn't it?
Well, it's called after a matchmaker. Dan Paddy Andy O'Sullivan, and he was the last, referred to as the last of the great Irish matchmakers. A lot of stuff was written by John B. Keane about him that probably made him a bit more famous than maybe he would otherwise be, and a lot of humorous stories told about him. And Kay there has written the story of Dan Paddy Andy O'Sullivan, the real story, and that's interesting to see as well. But in relation to matches at the festival, we do know a couple of matches were made, but we don't make a deliberate effort to get people together. People can find their partners there. We give them the opportunity in terms of dancing and everything else, the bog walk that we do and things like that. So we do know that on a couple of occasions we've seen people around the back of the marquee, and you can imagine.
I will let the listeners get their imagination for that
yeah,
one.
Exactly.
Brilliant. So you've grown up in Leather from Pine over the last couple of years. Tell us a bit about what this area has to offer.
Well, I suppose the thing about the area is the heritage part of it that we have the most interest in at the moment. Now, we are working on a lime kiln down below there, and we've put up a picnic table, and it looks like a bit of a feature now in the area. It's a bit of a landmark, and it's still not finished. It's about 95% finished. Further down, we're putting up a sign where there was a barracks and a historical farm, which goes back to the Earl of Kerry, back to the Fitzmaurices in Lixnaw, back to 1743. We have papers going back that far. And then further on up the road, we have a forge that we're going to have a mural of horseshoeing, we'll say, for instance, activity on the gable of it. And that'll be ready by July. So those are the sort of things that were around in my time, but is now they're beginning to be picked out and highlighted, you know. But when I was growing up around here, it would surprise people to know that there wasn't a tree to be seen, apart from a few trees around farmers' houses to break the wind. If a tree was seen somewhere, it would be the talk of the place. How did that grow there? And now you can see the wood from the trees, so to speak, mm-hmm. because the forestry has taken over, and it's even difficult to get a place to build a house because of so much of the land has been taken over by forestry. It's a pity the way it has gone, I think myself. If it hadn't gone that way, I think this place would be a tourist attraction now, like the west of Yorkshire and the moors and places like that, because to be so unique bogland, upland bogland, it was nice in its own way. Mm-hmm. But so that was the way it was that time. That was the scenery, that was the way it looked. And that has changed.
Yeah, tell us the story of Bord na Mona, because you were saying to me when I came here that I said that you have a beautiful view outside your house, but as you were saying about the trees, that they weren't there many years ago.
No, the Bord na Mona was the turf development board, I think they were called before that, back in the 30s. De Valera and company, they came up with this idea that Irish bogs had to be developed. So the old way of cutting was using the schlan and the pike and all that, and fairly backbreaking work and pretty slow. So idea came up, they went around to Russia and to Germany and places looking at how things were done there, and they discovered that the machine was the job. So they decided to open Leather from Pine Bog. They bought 500 acres of that mountainside out the window there that I was showing you from the door, And they bought it off the Quills, the family of the Quills. And it was a place that used to be known as Bagach na Mála Bhog. And it no longer is. It's a townland. It's one of those townlands that sort of has disappeared. It now goes under other names. But Bornemona decided to start their operation there. The first time that in Ireland that they used a machine to mechanically cut turf. And they, 1937, they brought in a good few men and they drained the bogs, the bog up there. And then they brought in the machine the following year, 38, and they brought in three Germans. They were called German engineers. I'd say they were sort of handymen more than anything else. And we still remember the names of them, right? Mm-hmm. One of them was Herr Karl, and his name, we didn't know what his first name was, but he went back early because we were heading into the Second World War. And there was another fellow called Karl Gottheim, and the local sage here, a local guy that used to write verses, wrote this about him, included in a song that he wrote about Bornemona and the turf cutting operation. And he wrote, "Crazy Karl Gottheim, sure you never saw the like of the loony things he does on the saddle of a bike." So he was a bit of a character. But he too, unfortunately, went back to fight for the fatherland, and the two of them were never heard of again. But the third guy stayed. He was Harry Starkin, and he lived here. Bornemona had built three houses for the engineers, and two of those still exist here and are used in Bairdcompán after all those years. But the Starkin stayed in one, and Harry was very popular because he could weld. And that was a big thing for farmers, welding bits of gates and welding bits of ploughs and anything like that. Mm-hmm. He also probably had the first car that was around here, so he was always going for the doctor for somebody or whatever. And he raised a family. I went to school with one of them.
Wow.
And Father Brian Starkin, he spent most of his time in Africa. He's now in Dublin. The other members of the family, that time there were four football teams in Leiricompán. You wouldn't get two people now from Lyra on the Dua team, yeah, because of the population fall and the age profile. So two of his sons played for Leiricompán, and in 1960, when Bornemona finished on that hillside, the bog was cut out, that family went back up to Offaly, to another Bornemona place, and the two of the boys got on the Offaly team. They played for County Offaly, they were that good. Mm. So that was the Starkins. One of them, Gay Starkin, he passed away last year, but he visited us here twice a year for a good number of years for the chat.
Mm-hmm.
He was living up in Westmeath, and they came down to Listowel and their breaks and hopped out here for the chat because he liked talking about old times, and there aren't that many people around now that can remember about Bornemona.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So that was the crew that came from Germany, and the machine then, of course, was a big thing in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
The machine would start, I'm not sure of the month now, but we'll say probably in April, and it would start at one side of the mountain and it would start cutting the turf. Mm-hmm. Right, and the mountainside would change from brown to black as the machine spread along, and us as young people, we'd be taking bets with each other as to how far they go the next morning, and literally the next morning, because it was the first time we ever heard of a night shift, that machine was going night and day.
Oh, wow.
And there was a drone from it, and I always remember that when you didn't hear that sound, there was a bit of worry in the place, because it meant that the heartbeat really of Leiricompán had stopped, and what was the reason, and would it get going again, because it was what gave employment and gave an income to families.
Mm-hmm.
But it used to break down at times.
Yeah, no, my question was, how many people would you say got employed from that?
Yeah, the roughly about 50 people were employed full-time all the year round.
Wow.
But in the summertime, when turf had to be harvested, when it had to be footed, mm-hmm. stood up, or collected in the collector, then you'd have hundreds. They came from all over. They were transported from, I'd say, from Castlemaine, from Tralee, from Tarbert, from West Limerick, from Scatdedlin, on the backs of trucks. There was no health and safety those days.
Wow.
And they'd come in and they'd take, what they'd do is they'd take a floor of turf. A floor of turf with a certain layout of the turf that was cut.
Mm-hmm.
There was 32,000 sods of turf in a floor of turf.
Oh my gosh.
And what they, and it was piecework. You took on a floor of turf and it didn't matter if you took a week to do it or a day to do it, you got the same money. So what people used to do is they'd bring in the whole family, and when the kids come from school, the kids would go in as well, and they'd try to get as many floors of turf done as they could, because they get paid by the floor. So there was a bit of money made, all right, because it's up to yourself.
Were they able to bring it home as well?
This turf was for that time, the hospitals and all those sort of institutions, they were heated with big boilers, right? And it was turf was the fuel. So a lot of the turf now that was saved and harvested on that hillside wound up in hospitals in Tralee and in Cork and places like that.
Mm.
They also sold it to private couriers, we call them, and people that had trucks who would buy it, and then they would resell it again. Someplace else, they'd have markets for it in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And we have advertisements in the papers from those times. They vied with each other to get the best of the turf.
And how many years did that go on for?
It went on from 37 to 60. I won't go into it now, but when they finished there, then they moved everything across to about 2 miles across the Smirle to Corrycannon, just beyond the pub up mm-hmm. there, which is the Four Islands Bar. They moved it on up to there and they set up their turf cutting operation there for a few years, but that was a smaller bog and they cut it out fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the end of that. They withdrew from it and went up the Midlands again, The Starkins left when they won over, when Lair Compan Bog was cut out. They didn't stay on for the Bournemouth one, for the Corrycannon one. So there was a locomotive up on that bog as well for to bring the turf down. There was, some people say 10 miles of track, but I don't think there was 10 miles of track. I don't think you could fit 10 miles up there, but there was a few miles of track up on that mountainside, and a locomotive which was brought in from Chicago. Yeah, there was one of those. It was an engine, and the funny thing about it was that you started it with petrol, and then you had to change over to diesel.
Oh,
it was strange. I knew the guy that used to drive it, and he was explaining to me how it works. That was unusual. When they finished in Lair Bog, that locomotive was taken over to Barna Bog, which is in East Kerry, and it was used over there for a while. They opened up Barnabog a good bit later than Lyre, so that was still going, and they used the locomotive.
And when it all stopped, did you find a lot of people left Lyre Compound after that?
Oh, there was, sure. When I was going to school, there was 108, I remember, was the highest number at the school, 108.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing at all like that there now. That's, it's a very small school now, and so the numbers have fallen. People had to immigrate,
mm-hmm.
and that's the way it went. But at one time, Lyra Crampon was probably the biggest employer in Kerry. If you think about it,
mm-hmm.
where else was there a place that gave permanent work to 50 people? If you think about it, there was no Kerry Co-op, there was nothing like that. So it was the biggest employer, and for seasonal work then, it was by massively the biggest employer, because there was a few hundred people would be over there in that bog at that time. Mm-hmm. The travellers would come as well,
mm-hmm.
right? There was one guy, he was called Charlie O'Brien, and actually a descendant of his turned up here looking for the story about him a few years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, he was from England, and he traced his relatives back this way. And Charlie, the O'Briens, they were in, he had a lame step, he had a bit of a limp, and another poet from Letterkenpond wrote about him.
Oh yeah, go on.
Yeah, it says the travellers are footing, that's footing the turf. The travellers are footing, the times they are great, they're parked on the river in Paddy's estate, and old Fallon down the road. And the old Charlie remarked, as he pawed at the ground, the bait of the Lyle people cannot be found. So he got on well, the travellers got on well when they were here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. There was 250,000 tonnes of turf taken off that mountainside over there in that time.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of turf. And all that had to be handled. Every single side of that had to be handled, not just once, but several times. They had a collector over there, which was basically a conveyor belt that was stretched across maybe, I don't know how long, I suppose, maybe 50 yards. And that would move forward and you'd be throwing the turf into it and it would be taking it out to the side, and then that would fall into the wagons and the locomotives, and that brought down to the
tip. There must have been some bedbacks back then.
Hmm?
People must have had bedbacks back then.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. And women worked up there too. And it was tough going. There's no doubt about it. Now, I'd say probably what kept people going was the camaraderie. There was, when you get a crowd together, like, you know, and they all... They Don't said that the chat other. And everything else could be pretty good, mm-hmm. I'd imagine. The so there's a long that sorry, Bournemouth has made a big impression, obviously, mm-hmm. in Letterkenpond. People outside of Letterkenpond think Bournemouth when they hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my generation probably dying a bit now, but everybody, that's what they thought, because somebody belonging to him at some stage would have jumped on the back of a truck to get a bit of work in mm-hmm. Lyre. It was a big employer.
And was it a lot of money that people were getting?
The money, they say that it was 5 shillings back in the 40s for a floor of turf, which is very hard to sort of figure out about that. I do know that the when the workers first started in Bournemouth, the wages were pretty bad.
Mm.
But they joined the union, and a lot of them joined the Labour Party, of all things, out here in the middle of nowhere. You would never associate. The Labour Party always had a big vote out here as a result of that, because the Labour Party were very connected with the unions.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my father was treasurer of the union, the local branch here, and he'd be counting the trippenny bits, just 3 pence a week that people paid. Three pence, and with a trippenny bit, like, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. And as a result of the union, to be fair, now I've researched it, the wages did increase, and they were on reasonably good money eventually.
Livable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was good money eventually, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. 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 So you've obviously seen a lot of this going up through the years, and obviously you seeing the schools going for over 100 students down to very little mm-hmm. now at the moment. Like, what is it that kind of means most to you about Letterkenpond, and what would you love to see change?
Well, I suppose what we do because of the heritage thing is that we obviously see things like the stories, the heritage, that can be told about Letterkenpond. That makes Letterkenpond a very interesting place. We probably have a better sort of identity than a lot of places, even though we're away from towns and all that, but we have an identity. There's a lot of stories there. It's an interesting place to live, and we would hope that by highlighting those things, having our own festival, highlighting all the things that we do through the heritage group and the other things that we do, that the place would become more attractive. And it is to some extent that you are getting people moving in some fashion. One of the big problems, of course, is that, you know, the Kerry County Council's policy on housing and planning permission is a problem and difficult to get planning around, and that's a bit of a drawback. Definitely, Letterkenpond should become a village and a stronger centre. Because the one thing about Letterkenpond is we still have everything that most villages don't have anymore, and that a lot of small towns don't have, and they're all underused. So from the point of view of the economics of things, Kerry County Council should certainly look at Letterkenpond and say, look, all those things are out there. Let's try to improve the population so that they're not underused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they keep moving people into towns, they're going to have to build all the things we have to facilitate them, exactly. So that's what we would say. But I think Lyra will never die out. Mm-hmm. There's too much going on, and I don't know. I think that there's a good voluntary community out here, and people help each other. And when things get going, we look for help there now for different things, and it's always there when you look for it. Like, you know, so mm-hmm. people.
And that's what makes a community.
People are a bit more community conscious in that fashion. In other places, like you wouldn't get to ask nearly people. There's a bit of a distance mm-hmm. between people, like, you know, but there isn't so much out here.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, Joel, thank you very much for telling us the story. There's lots about Lyra Confon, so I'm pretty sure we'll be back again. But thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Thanks.